sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Friday, May 30th.
It's Friday.
Friday and we're here. We're here. I guess that's not a big thing to say since it's only a four-day week, right?
I
mean, if we miss today, our week would look like crap.
And I'm working all weekend, so I guess it really doesn't matter to me that it's Friday, but...
That's true, huh? So it's not your weekend.
Yeah, not really.
Do you work every weekend?
No. I haven't been working as much on the weekends because I've been traveling a lot, but I am working this weekend.
Oh, wow. So do you get any days off at all when you work on the weekend?
No,
not
I
really.
Guess not.
Well, this doesn't count.
But
come on.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love doing this. I love doing After Buzz that I do. So I only really count like when I waitress.
Right.
I'm really working.
That's the only one.
And like
that
a 12-hour day if I'm shooting something that's long. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, that I count that as a... Probably I'm working, I guess, because it gets tedious. That like, hour
yeah, that's
10.
Hard work. I mean, you do a lot of things.
Yeah,
you know?
But no, and I guess, and when I waitress, I did a double yesterday, which went it was long, but I don't know. I'm with my friends. I'm really good friends with all the girls there.
Oh, nice.
So
it's not a miserable place
no,
to work at
and
all.
It's so chilled and relaxed that we just talk a lot.
Really?
We just
oh,
have
God.
Fun.
I guess women never get bored, right?
No.
We just talk a lot.
No, yeah. We talk a lot. So, yeah, and it's just fun. Like, the owners are super relaxed and just come in and have fun and have drinks with their friends and give free food away. So it's great. I'm lucky to work there. I really enjoy it.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, not many people are happy with what they do, you know?
Exactly.
And you're doing, like, so many different things that it's it never gets boring, I guess, right?
Yeah,
You have a variety of
exactly.
things.
And I haven't worked a weekend in a while, so, and I'm working with different people this weekend that I haven't worked with for a good couple months. So I'm excited to see them and work with them and catch up.
Oh, okay. Cool, cool.
So it's not too bad, I guess.
Yeah. I know. Well, if you're there both days, maybe I'll try and visit you and come get some to eat because, I mean,
should.
Just the food sounds great there.
It's so good.
You know?
So good.
Really?
They have something called garlic dough balls. Uh-huh. And they're dough balls. And, I mean, each one is apparently the size of a small pizza.
Really?
Which is so much dough. It's insane. But they have garlic butter sauce on them. They're literally the best thing I've ever tasted in my entire life.
Wow.
And to start with, when I first worked there, you get an employee meal. I literally got them every time I worked.
Really?
And then someone told me that each one is the size of an individual pizza. I almost had a heart attack thinking of the calories and all the fat and the dough that I was eating. So I haven't had them in a while, but... But that's so good.
It does sound good.
So good.
Yeah. So if well, okay, it doesn't matter. I'll ask you where it is later and stuff, and you
definitely.
Can tell me. Yeah. Sounds cool. So that's your plans for the weekend. My plans are not much better. I usually don't get that busy on the weekend, but I told you I'm really down to going to the beach and riding the bike and stuff. So I'm going to do that this weekend.
Yeah.
Spend some time in Venice maybe and, you know, just...
Yeah.
Those are fun every once in a while. I can't do it all the time, you know.
Right.
Because Venice is like, you know, you have to be prepared for it emotionally and mentally, you know.
I remember I met my friend. She was visiting from Florida. Her cousin lives in Huntington and, like, we'll meet in Venice Beach. So I went to meet her and it was getting dark and she was like, okay, we're going to go. We have to drive out to Huntington. So I walked with, she was with her sister and her cousin. I walked with them to her car. When I got to the car, it was like, bye, kiss, kiss, whatever. And then my car was at the total opposite end of the boulevard. So I was like, oh my gosh, I have to walk now. It's dark all by myself. I was petrified.
Oh, wow.
Petrified. Yeah. All the homeless people were coming up to me.
I know. There's so a lot scared. Of weirdos.
So sad. I was holding onto my bag so tight. It's like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get mugged. I get scared so easily.
Do you?
And in the, especially just walking in the dark alone, I get
well,
nervous.
That's justified. You know, I mean, my God, you know, I mean, a woman alone, you know, sometimes, you know, in places where nobody walks, you see a woman or a girl walking alone, even in daytime.
Yeah.
And you go, this is so unusual, you know. I mean, it's just like, it's dangerous. You don't know. I mean, and it's unfortunate that it is that way.
And in Venice, when you have all the skaters, like, skating past you so quickly, like, they could so easily swipe your bag.
Exactly.
Like, I can run, but I can't run after a skateboarder.
Okay, so don't get caught by yourself in the dark there anymore. Wow. So let's see what's going on. Well, we have two great who promises to be great guests in the studio. We'll get to them in just a second. I wanted to bring up this thing, which I found interesting because we've been talking about this. We've had some adult film stars here and stuff. A German study suggests that porn may be bad for your brain. So, you know, I mean, yeah, this follows years of telling us that masturbation is no good for you, will make you blind and all that. This is the next step.
Oh, I haven't seen those stories.
You haven't heard of them before?
No. Makes you blind?
Makes you blind. Those are like, grandmother stories and stuff.
Yeah, everything is bad for you these days.
Everything is bad for you.
Like, eating a banana is now bad for you, which is supposed to be the thing that's only good for you.
I know. So what's going on, you know? But the thing is that, so we must have like billions of people walking around really mindless because apparently porn affected their brains, right?
Yeah.
Come on, relax. I'm being facetious about it. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and people are not going to stop watching porn because of this, you know?
No.
Yeah. It's a fact of life, you know? And I think a lot of people do engage in watching porn. They just don't admit it. And
I think,
fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Even people that don't, that say they don't.
Yeah, because people are fascinated by sex and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it's such a like personal secret thing. And nobody, you know, you don't see it out in the open, you know?
Yeah.
You go to the store and stuff and you see people, just shoppers and things, and you go, and then you wonder, what do they do at home? You know, I mean, what are these people, what do they look like, you know? I don't know. That's what goes on through my mind. I don't know if it's through yours.
I don't know if that goes on through my mind, but I can see.
It just goes to show you, you know, some people have sex on their mind all the time, you know.
I think it's a male thing, too.
It is, you know, but that's why I'm fascinated with the porn stars, because they behave just like men, you know.
Right.
And it's hard to understand that. But, I mean, they're like hungry for sex all the time, you know. I mean, and I would never imagine in my life being so sexually active as they are. And I'm not even talking about work. This is like after work.
Well, it is, because they all kind of said that we were destined for this. This is what we were going to do since we were young. We knew this is what we were supposed to do.
I know. So apparently it's not just, you know, and then I'm sure some women are probably like that, but not in public, you know, not openly and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a clear thing, you know, people keep their sex lives private. But yeah, I mean, and they're finding out that porn is being watched by many women too, you know, because it's titillating, it's exciting, you know, it's stimulating.
Right.
But they make different kinds of movies for women and stuff, you know. So remember we were talking about to that woman that created Shush.com or something, right?
Yeah.
And that was site
just
for women and stuff.
Women, yeah.
Right. But she did say, you know, we still have hardcore in there because women do demand it. You know?
Yeah, they're all different.
So anyway, but... yeah, but if that's the case, half my brain is already rotten, you know. And the second half by all the weed I smoke. So I must be pretty brainless by now, you know.
I find these studies so funny because everything is bad for you. Everything can cause cancer. Everything is so negative in the news. And
I know,
studies,
we can't do anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Show that everything is just so bad for you. And I mean,
that's why I ignore it, you know, and I just like go and live like I want to, and whatever happens, happens, you know. And people don't understand, you know, because they say, well, you know, you live a certain lifestyle, you're going to die young and stuff. But, you know, the thing is that we all have to die somehow, you know. I mean, the thing is that, and even if you live a very healthy life, it's no guarantee you won't suffer before you die, you know. You don't know. So the thing is that, you know, and they've been, there are people that live not a very healthy lifestyle, but they live a long time, you know, and then they have a swift death. So, yeah. So you never know, you know, and I don't think you can plan it, but I just figure, you know what? I live one life. Let me enjoy it. If I enjoy these vices, what the hell, you know?
I agree.
That's it.
I totally agree with
you. Yeah, good. Because sometimes I think I'm crazy and alone in the world.
I agree with you. Yeah. I think you have to enjoy life, the life you live. And if you like smoking, then smoke.
Yeah, exactly.
Because giving up probably will cause more harm on you stress-wise. And if
not
you
just
don't,
stress-wise.
If you don't want to give up. If you want to give up, that's something. But if you don't want to give up and you are because you think you should, it's going to cause more harm because you're just going to have all these cravings and you're not going to be happy and you're going to be stressed. And
you got to be with it. You got to put yourself into it when you do something, you know, when you stop a habit or something. But whatever happens, happens, you know. I mean, I'm not going to sit there. But it's amazing how some people have become so hostile towards smokers now, you know. And it becomes like almost shameful to do it. So, you know. So I don't know what – I'm one of the few that are left. Mm-hmm. But
I know a lot of people that – and I think a lot of people I know smoke when they're drunk.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, now I
can. Yeah, that's true, huh?
They don't really crave it or think they crave it until they're drunk.
Right.
But it's because you see – when you go to bars and you see a lot of people smoking. I do.
Right.
But maybe it's just – I think it's the social scene. And when one person gets a cigarette out, it's like, oh, I want one too. Oh, I want one as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, that's it.
I think.
Yeah, that's it. No, I mean, that's true. You know, some people are like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have someone calling on Skype, and I don't remember anybody supposed to be on the show today other than our guest, so I'm not going to answer it. And if you're calling, you know, if we scheduled another person, I don't remember, you know.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, we'll, you know. The other day, a guest didn't show up, you know, so it's okay if we double book sometimes too, right?
Right.
It does happen. All right. Well, we're going to bring in our guests now who are sitting very patiently here and probably losing their mind with our boring conversation. So we have Bayou Bennett and Daniel Lear. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us, you guys.
Of course.
Very exciting to be here.
You guys have great names.
Great names, you know. I mean, Bayou is like, it's the first time I've ever heard a woman named that.
Oh, me too.
Are you like from New Orleans or
that right.
area?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
From the Bayous?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, how cool. So your name gives away where you're from. I guess that's the way names were supposed to be at one time, you know. Mm-hmm. Names were describing like what you did, like, you know, like, I don't know, what are some names, you know, like... Smith and Carpenter and all these things, you know. It's like you were named, or some people were named where they're from, you know.
Totally.
So yeah, so it's interesting. So you were born where? New Orleans then?
I was actually born in Hawaii, Maui, Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, how many people have that honor, you know?
My mom was a hippie.
Oh, really?
She wanted to go somewhere where she could be comfortable and be pregnant and give birth to me.
Wow,
yeah.
That's cool. Was she married at the time?
No, she actually, my dad is a musician from New Orleans, Washboard Leo Thomas, and he's well known down there. And she was a groupie, and she didn't think that a washboard player would ever be a good father, which he's my best friend in the world.
Wow.
And so they never got married, but he's incredible. I did a feature documentary on him and his career.
Really?
Wow.
So he was living there too when you were born? In Hawaii too?
Not in Hawaii. He was actually in New Orleans. The day I got born, and he was at Jazz Fest, and that's why he wasn't at, and that's kind of the last straw for my mom. Yeah.
Very interesting story,
you know?
Mm. Very cool. So is she still in Hawaii?
No. She moved to the south, closer to Arkansas, and then to Texas to be with our other family.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
So how long did you guys live in Maui?
Not very long.
Yeah. So she just went there, had a kid, and came back.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
that's perfect.
Yeah.
The island life while you're pregnant.
Exactly. I mean, she used to, like, I get really calm around the ocean, and I think it's because she used to bury her stomach in the sand. And
really?
And I feel like, it makes me calm now.
Wow. Now that's a hippie for you,
you
know?
Yeah.
were you delivered in water too?
No, they tried to do a home birth, but it didn't happen. But right as I got off the delivery table, they took me to a week long birthday party, and I still do that. I still have week long.
Really?
Birthdays. So wow. Now her birthdays are 3 months long.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's cool. That must keep you busy, huh,
oh,
Daniel?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a month before, and a month during, and a month after.
Cool. And where were you born, Daniel?
I was actually born in Old Jaffa, which is a little bit south of Tel Aviv, Israel.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And you were telling me you were born in Israel. I didn't realize you were born in Jaffa.
Yeah.
I don't know many people that were born there. That's an ancient city right outside Tel Aviv. Very small. A lot of ancient remains there and stuff.
Oh, very cool.
Right?
Yeah, they actually said that. I was listening to a tour one time when I was walking to my house, because we have a lot of tourists from all over the world who come there, and they said that the famous story of Jonah and the whale, mm-hmm. where he went out on a journey, ended up getting swallowed by a whale, he left from Jaffa.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, so you have a certain relationship with whales, would you say?
I do love whales. I do love whales.
Awesome. So what was it like growing up for you there? I mean, did you spend a lot of time in Tel Aviv, or were you spending time like on your street there?
Well, you know, for me, it was really interesting because I grew up between two different worlds, very mm-hmm. different worlds. Los Angeles, a small suburb called South Pasadena,
yeah.
and then Old Jaffa, which is like a very interesting ancient port city. And we have a mixture of Israeli and, you know, Arabic, you know, cultures there. So to hear, you know, the Muslim call to prayer every morning and to go eat hummus in the very places where all the workers go and eat and,
right.
you know, just to be around the fishermen and coming in early in the morning and, you know, selling fish and, you know, just be around buildings that are so, so ancient was interesting in contrast to where I was living here in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And it's totally a different culture too in Israel, you know?
Yeah.
So you were born there in what? Your parents moved to LA?
Yeah. My mother moved to Los Angeles, because she wanted to go to UCLA to study landscape architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So she designs gardens now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she knows every single thing about plants. She quizzed me my whole life on what tree is this and what plant is that.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm pretty good at that.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. So she came here to study, and you were here with her, right?
Yes.
And your dad, what happened with your dad?
My dad, they divorced when I was like a few months old.
Yeah, I know. That's what happened with my son too. Go on.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, I'm not meaning to make light of it at all, you know, but it's you kind of like you come into the world without knowing what your parents are like being together, right?
Yeah, it was difficult. I think I grew up with a lot of friends that are, you know, had divorced parents.
Oh, really?
You know, I think that was hard. And I think, you know, you either go one way in life or you go the other. And I chose to really kind of rebel against the examples that I was set with my dad.
Right.
My mom was always amazing. My dad, you know, set me examples I didn't really believe in. So now my relationship with Bayou, in terms of our marriage, is a total effort to, you know, kind of be the ideal marriage that, you know, I have in my mind, you know, where
right.
you like fully love and appreciate the person and just admire them, you know?
Right.
Wow, yeah,
I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the same. I grew up, my parents got divorced, and it's kind of, I never want that. And now
yeah.
I want to make sure it works. And when I get married, it works and nothing's going to go wrong.
Right.
That's right. Because I think it's like, you know, it takes a lot of work to make things really go right in life. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? It takes a lot of care and a lot of caring about the other person and a desire to really make things fantastic on both sides. And to take, I think a marriage requires a lot of responsibility, even if, you know, just to take responsibility for everything. The other person's not feeling well, take responsibility for them. The person is unhappy, take responsibility for that and help make them happy. You
right.
can't just be responsible for yourself in a marriage. You got to be responsible for the other person, no matter what's going on.
That's
you know?
True. That's a
yeah.
great view to look at
yeah.
it, you know,
yeah.
definitely. So you did some of you growing up here as well?
Yes, yes, yes.
Like what? During her whole college years? And did you stay here after that too, after she was done with college?
Yeah. I mean, I came here when I was 5 and then I, you know, stayed here until in Los Angeles until I was about 18. And then I decided I really wanted to study film. I finally found something that was really that was interesting to me and I was passionate about. And I enrolled to... I applied to NYU Film School. I didn't feel like I was going to get accepted, and somehow I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and
very
it was
cool.
an amazing experience.
Do they have a good film school there?
One of the best
yeah.
in the world.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the best in the world, and, you know, people like Oliver Stone, you know, went there. I think Joel Cohen went there. Spike Lee went there. a lot of very famous directors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I started living in New York, love New York. And then one lucky day at an Israeli food market on the Lower East Side, I met my beautiful wife.
Oh, wow. At an Israeli market?
Yes.
Now, what's a Southern Belle doing in an Israeli market in New York?
Well, the bigger story is like that the next day, like we met and we both were working on documentaries, and I was working on one about my father I was telling you about.
Right.
For Leo. And then we had a lot in common. But then next day.
Well, she was coming out of yoga class.
Yeah, I was coming out of
yoga. I was eating a veggie dog.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Really?
Yeah.
And then, you came out of yoga and you went to this restaurant?
Yeah,
well, it's the same place. It's all in the same place.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, cool.
It's like an integrated, spiritual, cool hangout of Lower East Side, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did you both end up there? I mean, like separately, but how did it work that way?
This is a crazy Destiny? Story. Destiny. Because I moved to New York, and I lived on 11th and C. Daniel lived on 11th and C, but I was with somebody else. We never met.
Wow.
Then I moved to Norfolk, and he lived on Suffolk. It's right across the street from each other. And then we met at the Israeli cafe right before he moved, right before I went to Amman, Jordan to teach filmmaking overseas.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Wow, this is good. So we'll get to that point in a minute.
Yeah.
So how did you guys like start talking? I mean, how did it work? Was it like, I mean, because I'm always curious how people meet, you know, and how they hook together. I mean, you're both in a market. What happened? Did you make a move on her or what?
Well, Bai, is it okay if I tell the story of how you saved me?
Well, this is his side of the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's two sides, huh?
I was being questioned some very, very deep philosophical questions by this like 6'5" healer. And I just didn't feel like answering these questions. And thank God this beautiful girl sits next to me and we strike up a conversation, and we just had so much in common. So I didn't have to answer any more questions about past lives.
Yeah.
And I, you know, instead I was, you know, next to this beautiful girl.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty, I mean, that was easy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's very hard to meet someone, you know? So you just start talking and stuff, you know? So, and you hit it off, you realize, now, were you still with the person you were with?
No.
Not anymore, right?
I was going to Amman, Jordan, as I said. I was going to Egypt, and I was going to dance over there. And I was just focused on my career. Mm-hmm. So it took him 6 months. We were in the friend zone for 6 months.
Really? Oh, wow.
It was very rough.
Yeah.
It was very rough.
And were you in Jordan during that time?
Yeah, so basically I left the next day. And
really?
Then,
oh, wow. And you must have been like, wow, I just met her and she's gone.
Just like that.
Wow.
But you guys kept in touch, and
yeah, he emailed me, and he made me laugh. I mean, I was a very busy, like, career-driven woman, and he made me laugh. I was like, oh, this guy's funny. I kind of paid attention, and I just went back to, like, my busy life. But, yeah, and then I'd say Bill Clinton got us together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Our former president.
As I said, my father keeps coming up. He played with Bill Clinton when he was governor in a band.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And as I said, I was doing my documentary at the time. And I said, Daniel, we have to go meet Bill Clinton. He's at Barnes & Noble's. And he's like, okay. So I get this picture of my dad, because he got invited on the White House for Bill Clinton's birthday. Hillary Clinton.
Oh, wow.
Had
so you had a picture with the president.
With the president playing music. Okay, so I'm like, we're going in line, and he's like signing books and not looking up at people, you know, just kind of doing his thing. And I say, Bill Clinton, here, you played with my dad. I show him the picture. He grabs me. Mind you, this is like the second time Daniel's ever seen me. He grabs me, gives me a hug. He's like, I played with her dad. And he's so excited.
Wow. Then,
yeah. So I told him about the documentary, but Hillary was going for her presidency, so we couldn't get the interview at that point. But
oh, wow.
Yeah.
But I woke up at 6 a.m. to be there for the interview.
Which is rare.
And I barely knew Bayou, so it was like, she was impressed, right?
Yeah.
I guess I would be too, yeah. Wow. So you went to, you were like a dancer?
Yes. I was a dancer, and I was a professional dancer in many different, theaters and in New York.
Venues,
and that's another story. Daniel came to one of my performances. This is like the third time he's met me. and it's like sold out, and I'm like, oh, come with me. And he sees me on stage with a live band, and he's like, oh my God. So he disappears. I'm like, where'd Daniel go? He said, What did you say?
Too hot to handle.
Yeah. You were totally impressed, huh?
Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh, man.
He's like, yeah, what if I wow. I've hit the jackpot here.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
So this is when, so the third time he's seeing you, this is when you've come back from Egypt.
Yes.
And now you're back in the States and you guys just kept hanging out and.
That's right. Wow. I'm still in the friend zone.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, you know what's really weird is that. When Bayou got back, I gave her a call and she's like, what are you doing tonight? I asked her what she's doing. She's like, I'm going to go see the I'm going to go see the Simpsons movie. And it was really strange because then Bayou and I ended up writing a screenplay for Nancy Cartwright, who does the voice of Bart Simpson. So it was, there was a lot of things early on that kind of, you know, ended up becoming part of our lives in a very strange way.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's nice to see because, I mean, sometimes you can tell people are meant for each other, you know? And it happens in a way where you go, you know, this is like, this can't be a coincidence, you know?
Definitely.
I mean, this just has to happen.
I totally believe in fate and destiny and, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is cool. So now we've established that you guys belong with each other and should stick with each other for a while. So let's tell our listeners exactly why you're here, what it is that you guys do, and then we'll continue, with finding out how you got to this point. So you guys are in film.
Yes.
You went to film school.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I went to film school. You know, I got my education at NYU. And Bayou, you know, was actually one of the youngest professors I've ever met. You know, she was actually a cinema professor at some of the top schools, right, Bayou?
Yeah, the Parsons Media. I was the first woman
to
be a professor at the Parsons School in the media department.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did you get that position? I mean, had you been like... studying this stuff?
I got my master's of fine arts and I was doing a film and I wanted to be a film professor and I went and tried out for the job and got it.
Wow.
When did you go to school?
Yeah.
Because you went to Egypt to dance.
That was after. Yeah.
Oh, that was after school.
I've had many lifetimes in this lifetime. Many lifetimes in this lifetime. So I think I graduated in 2004.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then I moved to New York right after that.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Very cool. So go on.
Yeah. So basically, when Bayou and I met, we just had so much in common, you know, and when she came back from Egypt, we started hanging out and, you know, she watched some of my films and did you enjoy him, Bayou?
Yeah. I mean, he's worked with some of the top people in the industry, like, the music industry, P. Diddy,
I worked for Isaac Hayes for 10 years, you know,
really?
He did the Shaft soundtrack and, you know, he got an Academy Award for his score on that. And he's a very inspiring person to be around. And I think Isaac Hayes, I was just talking about him this week. Isaac Hayes is kind of like at the foundation of how we try to be as people. We want to entertain, but we also want to do things that are meaningful and important. I think Isaac Hayes was always about that, like with literacy. You know, he was an honorary king in Africa. And he was always trying to uplift people, and that's what we want to do with our movies.
Right.
You know, so when Bayou and I got together, Bayou was teaching at the time, and she's like, hey, you know, my students, they don't really talk to each other. They don't know how to talk, this modern generation. They're just completely embedded in social media, and there would be kids next to each other texting each other instead of talking to each other. So she's like, let's make a movie about this. So we started writing this script called Text Me, and I had worked with a kid on a commercial named Matt Bennett, and I'm like, Bayou, this kid Matt Bennett would just be perfect for this film. So we got together, we started writing this film. Talk about coincidence again. We brought Matt Bennett to a casting audition, you know, to like get amongst some girls to find who would be the perfect co-star for him. The girl we ended up casting was a girl that was a star of a TV show that I first was a production assistant on for Disney.
Oh, wow.
So I like didn't know this girl and I found out that she was the star of this, you know, TV show, and now she's a star of our short film. We make the film. You know, we submit it to one festival, it gets accepted right away, and then it just starts going crazy, and it starts, you know, showing all over the country, and we win awards with it, and the actor becomes famous, and...
We showed it in Times Square for 3 days,
on the big screen in Times
Square. Yeah.
But it's very relevant. I can see why people would want to see it, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's cute because it's about a couple that meet on Facebook, and basically they think they're one thing, and then when they meet, they're totally something else. Like, he's like this cool, like, musician guy, but really he's like a nerd, and she's like this hot cheerleader type girl, but really she's like goofy too. Uh-huh. And when they meet, they're like nothing like what they thought, right. Even though they thought they fell in love online. And then during the whole date, they're texting each other, their friends, about what to do during the date. And they're, you know, there's a period where they don't talk at all. They're just texting the whole time. So right. It kind of talks about our generation. And that's a lot of what Bayou and I do, is kind of capture our generation.
Yeah. Well, very right. cool. I mean, because you're qualified to do that. You know, you're part of this generation. Mm-hmm. I imagine it's difficult to try and portray like some other times where you didn't live during those times. And kudos to those people who are able to tell stories about times that they didn't live in. But you guys are like connected to what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, obviously texting is a big deal, you know, and not talking to each other is a big deal, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, when my son describes to me all the text culture that's going on, he's 20, turning 21. And I mean, yeah, they barely talk to each other. So they get like sometimes mixed messages in the text because, you know, there's no tone, there's no anything, mm-hmm. you know. So they go based on that. I'm like, so he'll say like, well, I texted her and she didn't text back or didn't text back right away. So that means something, you know.
You took 10 minutes to respond. Why? I know you have your phone on you.
Yeah. Or like you showed interest and put a heart and a smiley face, and then on the other text you didn't put a smiley face. So maybe she doesn't like me as much and all that. And I'm going, my God, you know, you figured all this out from a text, you know, from a short text.
You know, it becomes hieroglyphics, you know, reading into symbols.
Yeah.
Really, a period. Yeah. A period can make the world of difference. A period at the end of the text, I am mad.
Yeah.
Oh. No period, I'm fine. A period, it's like, boom, that's it.
Exactly.
I think it's so amazing how people, you know, send these messages and they create different designs, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. All these different faces and rainbows, and they create flowers and mm-hmm. all these things. It's a really interesting world we live
in. Yeah, it's like an art in a way, you know? I mean, if you look at it, you know, it's contemporary art. People are creating things, you know, and it's a different time, you know. The media is different.
You know
what?
I'm going to go make some pieces, print them out, and I'll try to get a museum
show. Yeah, yeah.
Has anyone ever done that?
You know?
No. So this was the first film that you guys, mm-hmm. short film that you guys made together, and mm-hmm. it exploded. And then did you guys kind of think, wow, we're actually good at this?
Yeah. Not only that, I think the second project we did was a TV pilot, which was really cool. The concept was going to another country through one city block. Mm. In New York, we have these amazing communities like Little India. You know, you can go to Korea on 32nd Street in New York. And we cast Lea Michele. She walked into our audition. We're like, we think she's perfect for it. And then she became...
Say who she is.
Yeah, she became the star
from
of Glee.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Now she's on every magazine cover.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah. I don't know because I don't watch much TV, but the name sounded familiar.
Yeah. She's a superstar.
Yeah. So that's amazing.
We call ourselves, you know, those fashion forecasters. We call each other star forecasters.
So you know in advance who's going to make it. Yeah,
exactly.
I know this used to happen to me with Saturday Night Live, you know, with SNL, like a long time ago, because they've been around for like 35 years.
Right.
And I remember I would see someone like, you know, John Belushi or Eddie Murphy, and there were nobody, you know, but you could pick out the ones that are going to be big, you know,
completely.
And they've been, you know, they've been like a lot of people on that show, but somehow you could pick out the ones that are going to make it, you know,
because
they're very funny. And they have like,
they
you know,
just have a
natural...
star quality, that it factor. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Total it factor.
Yeah, and you can see they're very talented, you know, where some people are less. So, yeah. I mean, I don't mean to be mean or anything, but not everybody is a star.
Not everyone
material.
Has it. Yeah.
I remember even Jim Carrey had that tiny role. You know, I don't know what show it was on, but it was just very clear, like you said, that he was going to be a superstar.
Right, He was on in Living Color or something, right?
Or Cherub of Justice or something.
Yeah, or Second City, not Second City, but in Living Color with the those brothers, what are they called?
Wayans brothers?
The Wayans brothers, So, so that's where he was, and that's how he started. But so going back now, so what's the film called?
The short film we made was called Text Me.
Text Me.
And, you know,
and
we still have people contacting us from even Dubai, you know, to show it there. So it's kind of cool to make a film and then people keep responding to it in a way, because it was really the first film that really took on full on, you know, the world and the culture and the generation of texting.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
We made that in late 2009.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. So can people still see it? Where can people go see it?
Yeah, they can see it on our website at dreamteamdirectors.com.
Okay.
They can see it for free on there. And they can see some of her other work. Yeah, just dreamteamdirectors.com.
Well, I'm definitely going to watch it. Yeah. It sounds fascinating to me. How long is the piece?
The film is actually 12 minutes.
12 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's hard to tell a big story in 12 minutes, huh?
You know what? They actually tell pretty good stories in 30 seconds sometimes. I know when I used to go to the cinema in Israel, they would show commercials at the cinema, and there was like, whoa, in like 30 seconds, they did all these things. And I was like, you know, it's pretty impressive. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. But but when you have a movie, you have to develop the story a little bit,
yes,
right? So I imagine, you know, 12 minutes is a pretty big challenge to squeeze everything in. But you could tell your story in 12 minutes, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, you know, like Bayou and I focus on characters, you know, like you said, really developing our characters. So one thing that was really fun in making the movie is that a lot of it took place at a dinner table at an Italian restaurant, which ended up, it was supposed to be owned by the mob in the movie, and in reality it ended up being owned by the mob too, which is kind of another story. But, you know, what was really fun is just to break out a video camera and just to shoot the script with them sitting at a table a bunch of times and allow them to improvise, and some of the funniest stuff we were able to write into the script. So we love that process of developing a movie through just natural improvisation as well as, you know, our incredible writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Wow. So you both do the writing as well and the directing and everything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're like inseparable pretty much.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. You know,
how many... both said that at the same time. That was cute.
I mean, how many people get to do this, you know, and work at the same time together and be able to stand each other, you know, after
all these years. Do you deal with that? Because I know a lot of people can't work together and be in a relationship together. It's like 24/7 together too much. How do you guys cope with the work and kind of separating work and home life?
Well, we always make it fun. Like, that's number one. Like, we always laugh. It's so important to laugh. And then we also, when it's time for date night, it's date night. We don't talk about work.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So you have, like, date night and stuff. Oh, plus, you can stand each other. You know, that's an important thing. You know, some couples can't stand each other. So this is good.
I think a big part of it, you know, that's important to us is, like, when we're on a set, we try to treat each other like the new person on set. Mm. You know, we don't like take each other for granted, right, Bayou?
Right.
We don't go, we always say good job or great idea or, you know, because I feel like the problem in a relationship is when you stop creating. You know, you just kind of say, oh, okay, another day, how are you? But like every day is your opportunity to breathe life into your existence, you know,
that's true.
And make it new and find something new about it and acknowledge the person for the things they do well and, you know, really show admiration for the person that you're with, because as much as you admire them, your life is going to look completely different and is going to be beautiful. Like Bayou had this, she always posts things on Facebook that I love. Like, what was that thing about, like, if you stop complaining every day, you'll find yourself in a new life. It's kind of like that same concept of like what you admire and what you give life to becomes alive. Like when you were young, you had your little teddy bear,
right?
And you gave it a name and you cuddled it, and it's like it became alive, you
right
know? Yeah. The same thing with your loved one in your life, you know,
right? And it's the same thing with making a film, creating a film or a book or anything, you know. So I totally can see where you're coming from on that. So you guys have been married for several years, right? How long did it take you to get married after you met?
Oh, we have, I wanted to marry her like on the like very soon.
Duh. I mean, I would too.
So,
but what about her? Did you?
Not like
you weren't ready yet.
Yeah, I wasn't ready. I was very career.
Yeah,
driven.
She was still in the friend zone. That's yeah, where, that's where she's comfortable.
But you know, our wedding. I got to tell you about our wedding, you guys. It was amazing because we got married in a community garden in the East Village. So we paid like $50 for our
really
for the actual venue. But what was really, really cool is that Bayou got to design the whole wedding. You want to tell them about Bayou?
Wow.
It was like a little bit like Alice in Wonderland. So we had oversized, you know, flowers, and it was beautiful, butterflies everywhere. And then, so my family from New Orleans came, and they do like a parade, a second line parade. Okay, so that means like you have like umbrellas and beads, and you throw them. Okay, so New Yorkers
banjo, trombone.
Washboard. And so New Yorkers are very jaded. They do not stop for anything.
Right.
So we
someone dying in the street.
Maybe they're
like,
dying. Maybe. Okay, so we go from the garden to where we first met at the Israeli food market. We do a parade there, and we stopped. New York taxis, number one. We used to were hanging out of the windows. I'm sure there's film, like, you know, YouTube clips of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
A couple people have some cell phone videos of us in New York, let's
say. For
sure. That was memorable.
Very memorable, yeah.
Wow. We went right to the first table where we met.
Really?
Yeah. And at the wedding, we had veggie dogs because I was eating a veggie dog. And we had, what, like vegan cupcakes?
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was a really cool kind of modern hippie wedding, right?
Wow. Are you both vegetarian?
We love to eat vegetarian and vegan a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
But you don't call yourself that? Is that what it is? You still eat meat sometimes?
Yeah,
sometimes.
Still. Like we went to barbecue last night, you know, chicken barbecue.
But doesn't that create like a shock to your system when you don't eat meat a lot and then suddenly you do?
You need protein.
You need protein, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. That's how I like it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, people that are like total vegans, it's like, come on, enjoy life a little bit, you know?
But vegan does have great food. Vegan mac and cheese is phenomenal.
Really?
Way better than regular mac and cheese.
Yeah.
You know,
we're
coming into a new era with regards to vegan food. Like in the past, you'd eat something and be like, that kind of tastes like food.
Yeah.
But now it's amazing the
kind
of things you... Oh, yeah. There's some places where we live in Echo Park, like Sage... Flory Vegan. There's a new Indian place called the Samosa House, which opened up completely vegan. These foods are incredible, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you got to check it out and see, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's healthy food, right?
Very.
Because you eat like vegetables and natural stuff more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, good.
Yeah.
Good. So do you have any siblings?
Two stepbrothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, and where are they now?
In San Diego, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice. So they would come in the summers, you know, where I live down south, and every summer I was like, oh, what's California? What's it like? You know, because they'd be surfing, coming back with tans, and I'd, you know, with new music and cool clothes, and here I am in California.
So how did you decide to move here?
You know, the woman who wears the pants moved us here.
Yeah. So was that because your family is here too, or was it more for the career?
The career, fully for the career.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Not even the weather, right?
But the weather, the weather. We left on a five feet of snow in New York. I was like,
really?
I am out of here.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But you grew up here, right? So so you had an inkling of what you're moving to and stuff. And besides, you were in New York because you went to school there, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever think I'm going to finish that and then move back to LA?
You know, I love New York so much. I loved the city. Like it inspired me. It was so intellectual. It was so inspiring artistically. I thought I was going to stay there. But you know what? After a while living in New York, it becomes very difficult to live in small spaces with no time to get, you know, to just be finishing a project, then get on the subway. And my mom calls it, what, like a tuna sardine can or whatever. It's intense. It's very intense to live there. I mean, it's just, there's no rest. It's just always, the rhythm is so fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. And that's also a cool thing about it. You know, I know when I travel there, I love the speed and the pace at which everything moves, you know, and you're like... you rub elbows with people, just strangers and stuff, you know. But they're like all over. But at least I think you learn how to deal with people, you know.
Yeah.
Here people don't know how to deal with people because they text, first of all. The second thing is they're in their cars, isolated from everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get that, you know. We don't have public transportation to speak of. So you're not really ever around a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very stimulating. But I can also see how it would be tough. I don't think I could live in New York, you know.
It's tough. I would say the inspiring thing about it, though, is exactly what you're saying, that you have to live with people on top of people on top of people.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I've never experienced any kind of prejudice or racism in New York, really, because of that.
Really?
Because people have to live in communities together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they have to take the subway together and everything's together. So just this, it's kind of like this blending of cultures, which is beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So your mom is still here. And do you have siblings?
I have a half-sister in Israel who I love very much. Her name's Dana.
Uh-huh.
My name's Daniel. You could see where my parents went with that. And, you know, it's just, it's very far away. It's on the other side of the world. But
Do you go visit sometimes?
Yeah, we visit sometimes. And we're actually going to be, we were planning on shooting a film there.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's basically about teenagers living in war zones. And it's... it's like a very inspiring coming of age story. Like, again, everything we want to do, like, makes our audience feels empowered in some way. And it, yeah. I think it's kind of like a Stand By Me, but takes place in Israel with a young American teenage character who goes there. He doesn't really fit in at all in Los Angeles. And then he meets these skater kids there. He's a skateboarder and he totally like loves these guys. And he feels like he finally has friends. He meets this Israeli girl in this co-ed bathroom of an Israeli disco. Uh-huh. They hit it off. You know, they have this amazing relationship. But then it's August 2nd of 1990 and the Gulf War starts. You know, Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. You know, the Gulf War starts escalating not long after they start passing out gas masks. And Scud missiles are aimed at Tel Aviv and the city's threatened. And he has to decide whether to go home to safety in L.A., or to stay with the girl that he loves and his friends.
Oh, wow.
So he has to make a difficult decision, and he's very scared at the beginning of the film, and then he learns what courage means and what...
Don't give it away.
Okay, I'm not going to tell him. Yeah, yeah.
Is this going to be around a 12-minute again?
No,
this is a feature film.
Yeah, oh, it is. It's called Skateboarding with Saddam. So skateboarding with S-A-D-D-A-M.
Wow.
Yeah, and we have a website for that.
Very cool. Yeah. So you guys must be going to Israel for a while to be able to shoot this.
It'll be a 20-day shoot, and then we'll have to do pre-production. And so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you'll be there for a month or so?
Yeah.
Are you excited to be home and to go to Israel for that long?
It's going to be amazing. We've had the rare opportunity to work with our wonderful producers, Sandy Hockenberry and Doug Claiborne. And Doug Claiborne actually produced the movies that we loved, that I loved growing up. You know, his first movie was Apocalypse Now with Francis Ford Coppola.
Wow.
And then he worked on movies like Peggy Sue Got Married. Mm-hmm. And he produced Rumblefish with Matt Dillon, Mickey Rourke, and Dennis Hopper. And a lot of movies with Coppola. And to have him help us develop the script was an absolutely amazing thing. Someone who's done 26 feature films that have been, you know, had massive success.
Fast and the Furious, Black Stallion.
Wow.
To have that kind of belief in us and to have that kind of artistic support and learning from someone like that has been fascinating.
That's exciting. Very exciting.
Don't forget us minions when you make it big. You know? Remember you were here. Very cool. So you moved here, what, a few years ago?
Yeah, we moved here 3 years ago, right, by you?
3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so did you, are you planning a family or you planning to still finish the films first, right?
You're right.
There's plenty of time, right? What the heck, yeah. Today nobody rushes you and stuff. Now, how did your Jewish mother handle a non-Jewish girl?
Well,
easily, right?
You know, it's like, it's so strange because my grandmother was completely open arms. It didn't matter to her, Jewish, not Jewish, as long as I was happy. And I think that's what really needs to be focused on.
Yeah.
You know, because I kind of see the future as kind of like the movie The Fifth Element, where you're like Chinese and black kind of mixed together. Mm-hmm. And I think that as long as you find someone in life that you love, because how rare is that to find someone who you really care
about?
That's
very true, yeah.
That's what we need to focus on.
Right.
We don't need to... The world is divided because of things that should not be focused on. Religion, you know...
Politics, right.
Skin color. Yeah. Those have always been problems, you know? Right. And we should not focus on those things, I think.
But the way that's we did true. Handle it with our moms is we had a preacher and a rabbi at our wedding.
Oh, did you really? But they must still be concerned with the grandchildren and stuff, no? They never mentioned or anything like that?
No.
Cool. Like whether they'd be Jewish, you mean? Or?
Yeah, how they would probably be raised, both. Christian or Jewish,
both.
You know?
Yeah. Both. We'll the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Because, I think religion should be more like of a heritage rather than,
so
you know,
agree.
Yeah, like rather than something that's like fanatic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so you raise the kids with the culture, you know, with the holidays and everything, but you don't instill in them that we're right and they're wrong, you know, and things like that, you know?
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we're fighting some major wars and we're going through some you know, horrible things have happened in the history of our planet because of these divisions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not the intention of these philosophies. Their original purpose was wisdom, you know, and ethics. You
yeah,
know,
exactly. To keep people in line, you know, to avoid crimes and things like that.
Yeah.
And not push people apart.
Right.
I agree. And that's the thing, though. When you think about it, religion does have great things to it, you know, like family, for example,
yes.
you know.
And that's what I love about the Jewish community. Family is so important. I love that.
But you have that in Christianity as well, in Islam, and all that. You know,
true.
I mean, because that's what religion promotes, family and things like that. You know, it helps keep people together. But you are right. In the Jewish community, it's even more so.
Yeah.
Simply because I think there's not that many of us, you know, so we try to preserve the heritage and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But and don't forget also that our Western religion, so to speak, gave us all the laws we have today, you know, like do not murder and all these things that are like things that gave people, you know, like people in the Stone Age or something, you know, very ancient people, give them sort of like guidelines of how to get along with other people in society, you know,
right,
to preserve themselves. So anyway, enough with philosophy for one day. Guys, we're out of time. Let's go ahead and promote your websites, the upcoming projects, whatever you already have. Go ahead.
So our website is dreamteamfilm.com.
Dream Team Film Directors.
Oh, my God. our Twitter is Dream Team Film. Our website is Dream Team Film Directors.
No. DreamTeamDirectors.com.
I'm like, she gave me the wrong one.
Yeah, DreamTeamDirectors.com is where you can see all of our work, basically.
Okay, great.
And then we have an Instagram as well.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
That's Dream Team Film?
Dream Team Directors is the Instagram.
Okay.
Dream Team Film is Twitter.
Got it.
Thank you.
And then Skateboarding with Saddam Film if you want to learn more about the movie.
Yeah.
Great.
And then you didn't mention the companies, Dolce Films?
Yes. That was like the, you know, inspired by Federico Fellini. You know, we started that company. But now we've pretty much, because, you know, when Bai and I started working together, everyone's like, you guys are a dream team.
Yeah.
So we really liked that. And people liked being part of the dream team. So we decided Dream Team Directors would be our new company. And so we launched this new website, dreamteamdirectors.com. And we're just like, you know, this is what we are. We're the dream team. Everything we touch seems to turn to gold or awards or
recognition. Well, you're very fortunate that way.
Yeah.
Very fortunate. At a good time in your lives. Well, you guys are very sweet, very cute together.
Yeah. Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're speaking, of course, to Bayou Bennett is the last name, and Daniel Lear. And are you ever going to take on his last name, or you already established yourself as
a director, a performer, I'm Bayou Bennett, but married name is Bayou Bennett Lear. So,
I see. Okay, good. That's how you solve it.
That's a
million names, a million hyphens. You know? All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. It was an amazing show.
Of course. And everybody will, you guys will be able to listen to it later.
It
all gets archived and everything. So all the best to you. Congratulations on a great relationship, too.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very refreshing.
Everyone can do it.
Yeah. Well, I wish it upon myself.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Charlotte, thank you.
Thank you.
See everybody on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte right here on LA Talk Radio.